Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Paternal Combustion Center here at Car Talk Plaza. That is pot as opposed to mot.
Yes, you may remember several weeks ago, somebody sent us a list of things you'd never hear your mother say.
Yeah, like, go ahead and keep that stray dog, honey. I'll be glad to feed and walk him every day for the rest of his life.
Yeah, well, this week, someone named Sedona Claypool sent us the corollary to that.
Things you'll never catch Dad saying.
Exactly.
Like?
You'll never hear your father say, well, how about that? I'm lost. I'm just going to pull over here and ask for directions.
Yeah, right.
Bad chance.
You've ever done that? Never.
How about this? Here's a credit card and the keys to my car. Go crazy. No son of mine is going to live under this roof without an earring and a tattoo. I can just hear my father saying that. Okay, here you go. I think that's enough football for this weekend. Unlikely. Remember, your room is always waiting for you if you ever decide to move back in with us.
Yeah, I think they filled my room with bricks when I moved out.
Right. Okay, I put a padlock on the door to your room. Here's the only key. What you do in there is strictly your business.
Oh, yeah, grow anything you want. We don't care.
And finally, here's the last one. Your mother and I are going away for the weekend. You might want to consider throwing a party.
Why not? Burn the house down. Well, look, if you have a question about your car or your parents' plans for the weekend, give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, Click and Clack. This is Jonathan from Leesburg, Virginia. How are you today?
Good, Jonathan from Leesburg. What's cooking?
Well, I've got a tricky one for you, I think. I have a Mazda Tribute. It's a 2001. It has 170,000 miles on it. Now, I've had no problems with it. It's been a great vehicle, except about 4 months ago, in the middle of the summer, I was driving home from a party, and boom, underneath the hood, I hear this loud pop, and I kind of limped home with hardly any power and raised the hood. The spark plug and the igniter coil was gone.
Oh, you heard more than a boom. After that point, you must have heard a...
Well, it really sounded like a tank, actually.
Must have been a heck of a party if you didn't hear that.
Yeah, it was just like this, this popping.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So anyway, I went and got a spark plug and igniter coil, and I just put it down in there, tightened it up, and it ran fine. I didn't have any more problems. And about a month later... boom, another one pops out, and this time it's a totally different one. It shoots out of the engine, and it blows off the igniter coil.
And takes out a kid on a bicycle two blocks away.
I didn't hit anyone, luckily. And
yeah.
I got home, I did the same process again, put another one in it, and I was just dumbfounded. And
well, why didn't you do them all when you were at it?
Well, here was my thought. I thought, gosh, to my understanding, the spark plugs had been changed one time before, but I couldn't find the records of that. But, and this is not the end of the story. About a month ago...
I'm sure it isn't.
It happens the third time. This time I'm in the middle of D.C., in the middle of traffic.
And hey, yeah. Let me guess, it was yet another, a different one this time.
Totally different.
Yeah, well, you got three more chances at this. And I think your problem will be solved by then.
Little at a time.
What in the world is causing this?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. Whoever replaced the plugs...
didn't put them in tight enough.
Exactly.
And little by little, they're loosening up, and bingo.
And the thing is, once it gets to the point where it's a little loose, it's a slippery slope from that point on. And you probably, if you listen very carefully, you may even be hearing the noise now. You can hear a little tick, 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 tick.
You're exactly right. That's what I heard before the last one blew out, was that ticking.
And what it sounds like is a valve that's sticking or a valve that's out of adjustment.
I just thought it was the countdown and that I should park
it.
That's exactly what it is.
But that tick, 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 tick is combustion gases escaping around the threads where the spark plug screws in. And and we've been fooled by this in the past. We still hear cars like this all the time, and you think it's a valve train noise when, in fact, it's a loose spark plug. So whoever changed these was probably – I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. The kid who changed these had gotten yelled at the week before for over-tightening spark plugs and breaking them.
Yeah.
So the boss said, you over-tighten one more spark plug, and you're going to the woodshed. So this kid put these things in hand tight, and how many months has it been? Maybe years, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, this has caused some collateral damage, too. You know, I got my hands really dirty when I was fixing that plug on the side of the road. So I dug through the back of the Tribute, and I found a can of that latex hand cleaner.
Uh-huh.
But it was missing the nozzle. And I had my windows down because it was, you know, pretty warm outside. And so I just figured I'd use my thumb to get some of it to come out. And instead, I shot a big blob out my window, and it landed on the windshield of the car beside me.
Great.
I'm sure they were thinking, what kind of bird was that?
Oh, Jonathan. Well, so you know without a doubt which of the three that you've already replaced. But just to be on the safe side, I would check the remaining three plugs that haven't blown out yet.
And tighten them up
the three that you did.
Yeah.
You should probably be tightened to about 15 or 20 foot-pounds.
Okay.
And the risk you run, of course, under-tightening them results in what happened to you. And you're lucky that you didn't take out any passers-by or blow a hole in your hood or something. But when they do come out, it comes out with tremendous force.
Yeah, the second one actually was stuck into the air manifold cover or whatever that is. It was stuck in there about an inch.
Oh, yeah. No, it can be pretty exciting.
So
you must have thought, boy, that was some party I went to. Oh, well, good luck, man, and tighten them up. I don't think you have anything more to worry about.
Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate it.
All right, see you.
Good
see
luck.
You.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. He's a patient guy. He's going to wait for them to blow out one at a time.
Why not?
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Stephanie calling from Eugene, Oregon.
Stephanie Oregon. Get it. What's up, Stephanie?
Oh, well, I have a 2001 Jeep Cherokee, and my vents don't blow where I want them to go.
Oh.
Yeah?
Yes.
And where do they go?
Oh, wherever, anywhere but my feet. So I have cold toes right now. but mainly on the windshield. Otherwise, I can't ever seem to get them to blow on me or the passenger. And I'm starting to realize now with all the rain that good ventilation is a good thing. You know, right now I have a wet dog in the car and a wet hubby in the car, and it's a moving sauna by the time all the rain comes in. So I'm having problems seeing. You know, I can't seem to clear off the windows, so it's really becoming a problem.
And you haven't done anything to solve the problem?
No, I mean, other than trying to adjust the position of the vents as far as with the knob, you know, to turn it to go either on my head or my feet.
Right, but that isn't working. So once you establish that isn't working, you didn't go to the next level.
No, the next level is to call you.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for calling.
Can you get this to change at all, or can you get the direction of the airflow to change if you... For example, if you're climbing a steep hill and you floor the gas pedal, or will it change if you, in fact, take your foot off the gas after accelerating hard? Have you ever noticed that the direction of the air moves at that point?
I have not. That's very interesting, but no, I haven't.
Well, it may not be interesting either.
We're just stalling for time.
Sometimes when I adjust it, I can hear it moving almost in the dash, but it just never seems to go anywhere.
Well, you have a vacuum-operated blend door system. In other words, when you move that knob from feet to face to defrost, what you're doing is you're closing one door and opening another. There's only one blower in there, and that blower is taking air, basically most of it from inside the cabin and a little bit from outside, and it's just
directing it to where you want it to go.
Right. That thing is just blowing air, and you're telling it where to send it, except that the thing that's telling it where to send it is broken. So either you have a vacuum leak or one of those devices is broken. And do you notice that by any chance that the engine runs rough at idle?
Yes, it just started doing that.
Well, you must have a vacuum leak. So the vacuum from the engine is not getting the door controls. Okay, so you need to take it someplace so they can open the hood.
Yeah, you're not going to fix this.
You might. If you open the hood and you heard a hissing sound,
mm-hmm.
you might figure it out. You might say, there's a hose that's disconnected here, and you'd stick the hose on. It usually is a rubber hose, probably about 3/8 of an inch in diameter.
Okay.
And if you found one of those hoses, it would be up near the firewall.
Okay.
You know where the firewall is?
Well, on the computer, yes.
Well, this is the same basic idea, yeah. Except that it was meant to contain real fires.
Okay.
And the firewall is that piece of metal that's between the passengers and the engine compartment. And you would see it. It's the thing that's farthest back or closest to the people in the car. And that's often where these vacuum connections fail. So you could be a hero, Stephanie.
Yeah.
Yes, I like the sound of that.
And if you can't figure it out, take it someplace and they'll hopefully fix it in a few minutes. But that's what it sounds like. And that would account for your inability to direct the air, and also the fact that the engine is running rough because too much air is getting to one cylinder and leaning out the mixture.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. It's probably not this at all, but it sure sounds good, doesn't it?
Well, it sounds a lot better than having to take the whole, dashboard.
Well, you may have to do that too, but this is a first
Let's hope for the best.
Okay.
See you later.
All right, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. All right, look, before we take another call, can I adjust a previous answer?
Adjust an answer? What's that like, adjusting your shorts?
Well, it's equally impolite, but I need to modify an answer to a previous puzzler.
What happened? You screwed up another one, didn't you? You did, didn't you?
Well, screw up is kind of a harsh term, isn't it?
Yes, but is it an appropriate term?
Oh, totally.
All right, fess up. Which one was it?
Well, it was the football puzzler.
Oh, the team without the place kicker.
Yeah. I said that there are some football teams around the country, and I'm thinking of kids' teams, you know, that don't have place kickers, so they can't kick field goals or extra points. You remember?
And you said that there was one thing that a team without a place kicker could not do.
Right. And my answer was, without a place kicker, a team could not end up with an odd-numbered score, right? I mean, field goals are 3 points. Extra points are what? 1 point. And everything else in football is an even number of points.
Well, that made sense to me. But what do I know? I was on the poker team.
Well, turns out I forgot about the famous Flutie dropkick.
Ah, the famous Flutie dropkick. What the hell is that?
Well, Doug Flutie, playing for the New England Patriots, our team, famously scored a field goal, which is 3 points, by using something called a drop kick, which is where the quarterback drops the ball, it hits the ground, and as it's hitting the ground, he then kicks it. And that apparently makes it a legitimate field goal, assuming it goes through the uprights, in the NFL. And apparently he did it, and it's legal, and it's legit in lots of other places too, I guess.
So based on that, one would have to say that your puzzler was what? Totally bogus.
Well, I would say partially bogus. So I don't want to penalize the original winner that we picked, but we'll pick an additional winner from the thousands of people who wrote in to yell at me. And, of course, we'll award an extra prize for that week.
Well, it's coming out of your pocket completely. The whole $26 is on you.
Fine. Hey, can I borrow $26?
No!
All right, look, if you have a question for us about your car...
We're a little better at cars than we are at football, I hope.
A little, maybe. Call us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Virginia calling from New Haven.
Hi, Virginia. How are you?
Good. I have a 96 Ford Contour standard transmission, and I park it across the street from my house. And 2 weeks ago, someone smashed the back passenger side window and broke into the car. And there's nothing of value in the car at all. They went through the whole glove box and couldn't find anything and took 2 bottles of seltzer.
Oh.
Then I had to pay an arm and a leg to get the window replaced. So my question is it worth it to leave the car locked, or should I leave it unlocked and let the crooks rifle through the glove box if they want, but not have to pay to replace another window?
Jeez, I mean, first of all, there's always going to be somebody who will want to steal this car.
Right.
And if you don't, you might want the car stolen.
No.
So, I mean, locking the door serves as a deterrent to the casual car thief.
Yeah.
So if you could convince people that there's nothing in the car of value, maybe a sign in the window. Well, I remember years ago in New York, people would have the signs that said, no radio.
Yep.
My wallet's under the seat, but there's no radio.
I was wondering if I should leave the glove box open.
Exactly. Leave the glove box open. and put a sign on the glove box door that says, nothing in here either. If there's a light bulb in your glove box, you'll have to take the light bulb out. Otherwise, you'll have a dead battery after a few days.
Oh, dear.
But,
okay.
But you could leave the glove box door open and definitely put a sign in more than one window.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you'll need one on both sides of the car. And then when you want it to be stolen, you can start unlocking it. But I think at this point, you'd be disappointed if the car was stolen, wouldn't you?
Oh, if it was stolen, my parents would not be purchasing me another car. I would be carless.
Oh.
We don't want that.
Are you a student? You at Yale?
I'm a student, yeah.
No. What are you studying?
What am I studying? Architecture.
Architecture?
Huh.
How close are you to gainful employment?
It's a good question. I wish I knew.
If they asked you this question.
Yeah, well, I am a senior, so I should be closer to gainful employment than I once was.
Oh, no, you have to go to grad school.
That's true.
Sure.
So stay in school and keep this car going, you think?
I think so. So make sure you lock it up, put the signs in the window, and does it have a radio?
It does have a radio.
I'd rip that thing right out and leave the wires hanging out of the dashboard. nothing says pass me by better than that.
Okay.
And then your sign can say also, poor student, have mercy on me.
Well, I don't know if the townies in New Haven think much of the poor students.
Oh, well,
no,
maybe they may not. Maybe you'll leave that out. All right. Well, whatever. Yeah. Good luck.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you.
See you, Virginia. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Look, it's time for us to take a little break.
And when we come back, what happens then?
Well, when we come back, we'll have the answer to last week's puzzler.
Which was about what?
Well, it was about a hedge fund manager named Throckmorton, bottom feeder the fourth.
Throcky, my buddy. I remember Throcky.
I'm sure you do. And we'll be back with the story of the bottom feeder's calamitous castle construction.
It was the staircase.
That's right. And we'll have more of your car questions, too, in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
Well, I'm riding down the highway, glad to be alive in an old beat-up Mopar with a 225. Don't need no Jaguar, don't need no Corvette. Haven't seen a new car that I had to own yet. So just give me a Mopar with a 225. Nothing too fancy, just something to drive.
And even though security sets up two human-sized have-a-heart traps near our studio door, whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler. And the inspiration for this came from a fellow named Walter Newton, and it was from my Medieval Castle series. You ready? Pay attention.
Yeah.
An obscenely wealthy hedge fund manager named Throckmorton, bottom feeder the fourth, decided to build for himself and his trophy wife a modest little 40,000-square-foot stone castle, complete with an observation tower at one end. They thought that this cylindrical tower, almost 100 feet in height, might come in handy one day to spot the first waves of angry investors, the kind with pitchforks and torches that might come asking for their money back someday. Anyway, the construction crews worked assiduously day and night for little or no pay and were, of course, constantly being badgered by the bottom feeders, especially Mrs. Bottomfeeder, who was extremely detail-oriented.
I have several ex-wives who were detail-oriented.
Yeah, details like, you're getting a job?
Yeah, real picky.
Anyway, for the stone tower, they employed the finest masons in all the land. They wanted their castle to be as close to the real thing as possible. And to speed things along, as the outside of the tower was being constructed by one group of skilled masons, another group, even more skilled, was working inside, building a spiraling stone staircase that climbed the inside wall of the tower from top to bottom, rather from bottom to top.
Yeah.
Finally, after many months, the castle was completed, just in time to coincide with the end of the bottom feeder's lengthy vacation. As you might expect, upon their return, the bottom feeders scrutinized the construction, pored over every detail. Everything was perfect. The workers were brimming with pride. Then they came to the tower, and Lady Bottomfeeder, as she now wished to be called, stood there in awe. Her eyes followed that spiral stair all the way to the top. Then her jaw dropped. "This won't do," she said. "You must take it down at once and fix it. It's all wrong. You'd never see anything so ill-conceived in Europe. Why, we'll be the laughingstock of the entire world." What did she see that was unacceptable?
Yeah.
Well, what she saw was that the staircase was wrong. Now, the medieval castles that had spiral stairwells that, when viewed from the bottom, climbed the inside tower wall, just like hers, in a clockwise direction. Imagine imagine you're the princess. The castle is under attack.
Yeah.
You'd have to shave the beard. But imagine if you were the princess, you're in the tower, and you have a group of knights who are ready to give their lives to defend you. You right? You with me?
I'm with you so far.
Well, so attackers coming up the stairs and wielding their swords in their right hands, which everyone pretty much did, would find it difficult to swing freely because the wall
is there.
It was on their right side.
Yeah.
And would be in their way. So they clang, clang, clang it. But defenders coming down the staircase would have no such impediment and would have a clear advantage. 40 lashes to those imbeciles built the thing spiraling in the wrong direction.
Wow.
Anyway, do we have a winner?
Yes, we do have a winner. Our winner this week is David Anderson from Albion, Michigan. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, David's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which he can get a set of CarTalk reusable grocery bags.
Yeah, I mean, instead of advertising the name of your supermarket on your reusable shopping bags, why not advertise that you have terrible taste in public radio programs?
Why not? Actually, it's not that bad.
No, on one side of the bag, in big letters, it says, "My other reusable bag is from a good NPR show."
Well, that set of CarTalk reusable shopping bags can be yours, David, if you want them, for being this week's Puzzler winner.
Now, if you didn't win today, don't fret. We have a new Puzzler still to come, but first, we have some car questions to answer. Are you ready, Tommy?
Ready? Of course not.
What else is new? 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Rick from Rexburg, Idaho.
Hey, Rick from Rexburg, Idaho, huh?
Yeah.
What's going on, man?
We've got a 96 Subaru Legacy wagon with about 192,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
And this summer I had new bearings put in the drive shaft and had replaced the rear differential. Well, now I'm on my third replacement differential, and I wonder why they keep catching fire.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Actual flames and smoke and all that good stuff off the replacement differentials.
No kidding.
We were stopping for lunch after a fishing trip, and a sheriff's deputy was kind enough to pull over and tell me that my back of my car was on fire, and that was kind of interesting. So we borrowed a fire extinguisher and brought it back to town on a trailer and put in the second differential, and it had the same problem, and so has number three.
And when you have this flame, it's really coming out of the differential?
It's on top of it. I'm guessing.
There's a vent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm guessing the seals go, and then the fluid gets hot, and it just starts going.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I called the local Subaru dealer, and they assured me this isn't a feature they build into their cars. And they have no idea what to do with it.
Oh, and they never heard of it before.
No, huh?
No, and if they did, they'd never tell you. Oh, yeah, they all do that eventually. So let me get this right. The original differential failed how?
It started making a lot of noise, and I had it put up on a lift, and they tested it and determined that the gears were going out.
Well, I'm going to say that you might want to do some investigation and find out if there are different ones. I know the automatic and the manual differentials are different.
Are they different in terms of gear ratios?
Yeah, I believe so. So if you have an automatic, you've got to have a certain one in there, and it's going to be the right one. And if you have a manual, it's going to be the certain one.
Okay,
so you bought a new one.
I have the shop buy it from a wrecking yard not too far away.
They
have
you would expect that. And when it failed, they got another one from that same yard.
That's correct.
And another one from that same yard. So if they made the mistake once, they could have made the mistake three times. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But let's assume they didn't make any mistake.
Okay.
Because usually the wrecking yards know enough usually to say, hey, is it a stick or is it an automatic? Blah, 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 and they usually, because they've made that mistake before and maybe had one catch fire. Who knows? But I'm thinking maybe the problem is not at the differential, but it's at the other end. Okay? And it's at something called the viscous coupling.
Viscous coupling.
Yeah, that's how you get. So the power comes out of the engine, goes into the transaxle, where most of it goes to the two front wheels, because this car is predominantly a front-wheel drive car. And then there's part of that transaxle that has in it something called a viscous coupling, and that's connected to a drive shaft that ultimately connects to the rear axle assembly. That's the thing that's catching fire.
Yeah.
And it could be that viscous coupling is faulty and somehow or another imposing a load on that. So here's the experiment you might have to do. You might have to take that drive shaft out after you put the fourth differential in and drive it and see if the thing catches fire. And I'm guessing it won't.
So what does it take to replace a viscous coupling? A
few hundred bucks.
Ooh.
And that could be the problem. It seems like it's the problem. On the other hand, you could just walk away the next time someone says it's on fire. Right?
Yeah, both of these times it happened on fishing trips, and I'm wondering if fishing is the problem.
Well,
I don't think so.
It could be.
So you have to drive this for several hours, obviously, before it gets hot enough.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So fishing, huh? Have you considered maybe taking up archery? You could probably do that closer to home.
Yeah, that's. I was wondering if I could paint targets on the car right now and do that. Yeah.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, anyway, good luck, Rick. Keep us posted.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Jeez, you think after the the third time I'd have given up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't warn him, and I probably should have, that the gas tank is pretty not as a close by, it straddles the rear axle assembly.
Yeah. That's gonna end this whole problem. The next time.
Yeah, he should get the suit, the asbestos suit. Oh boy.
I'm sure he knows how to get out without even stopping.
Oh yeah. Just on the fly. 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kirsten from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Kirsten. From Portland, Oregon. What's going on?
I have a 2003 Chrysler Town & Country. It's a flex fuel vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And ever since we started using the E85 a couple years ago, we've noticed that our mileage has decreased. The van kind of runs rough. And every time we switch back to putting a regular tank of gasoline in, the check engine light comes on. And our mechanic has told us that that's something that happens with these kind of cars and just clears the code for us, but we have no idea why the check engine light is on all the time.
And when he clears the code, does the check engine light then stay off for the remainder of the time that you're using real gasoline?
Yes, and until we start the cycle over using the E85 and then put the regular tank. And it takes about 10 or 20 miles with the regular tank to trip it back on.
Oh, by the way, for those who don't know, E85 is a blend of ethanol and gasoline. And it's designed to take advantage if you live in the right place where they grow a lot of corn, like Portland. Why are you using this? That you would use maybe a corn-based fuel, which is alcohol, blend it in with your gasoline, and it's 85% ethanol and 15% gasoline. It would seem like the right thing to do if you could get the stuff cheap enough, like if you had a farm and you were making it, and what you didn't turn into corn liquor, you could actually burn in your vehicles. So you're using it. Does it cost a lot less than gasoline?
It's about 20 to 60 cents less per gallon.
20 to 60 cents less per gallon.
60 cents.
And
yes.
you're going to get diminished mileage with it because it has fewer BTU per pound of fuel.
Oh.
You know? And so a gallon of E85 is not going to have as much kick in it and power the vehicle as well. You may notice there's a little diminution of power, too.
Yes.
Yeah, but 60 cents is 60 cents.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, if it were you, Tommy.
If it was me.
You only put 60 cents of gasoline in your car a week. Anyway, it would hardly matter. So if you're driving a lot, you have to sit down and do the math.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm guessing the reason the check engine light comes on is there may be some problem with the air-fuel ratio, the oxygen sensor, detecting the difference in the mixture when you switch over from the E85 to the gasoline. We don't see any E85 vehicles in our shop. So I'm guessing that what's happening is when it recognizes the exhaust coming from normal gasoline, if it's been reading the stuff coming off the 85, it turns the check engine light on because it probably thinks the thing is too rich.
Oh.
Okay. I'd be willing to bet that if you drove it long enough and didn't have it turned off, it would go off, or the van would catch fire. So what's the
longest? So give it a shot.
Okay.
What's the longest you've ever driven it with the check engine light on after you made the switch over?
Weeks. It doesn't come off until we clear the code. So if I can't get into the mechanic and it's not acting terrible, then I'll drive with it on for for a week
but,
or two.
But does it act terribly? Or
it's
just...
not with the regular gas. With the E85 is when it runs rougher.
And that's why you switch back. So why? So the question is, why are you ever going back to E85? Why aren't you just giving up on that?
Well, didn't he say 50 cents a gallon?
But your mileage is less, and it may be that it's a wash. It may be that, in fact, if you're saving 40 or 50 or 60 cents a gallon, but you're getting, you know, 15 or 20% less in mileage, it might not be worth it.
Okay.
You want to calculate miles per dollar.
Great.
And yeah. if you do that and they're the same, then use the gasoline.
Okay.
Or use the ethanol. Whichever you want. See you, Kirsten.
Thank you.
No, we muddied the water on that one.
No, but when you figure it out, give us a call because I'm curious about this.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, I'm sure we'll get millions of emails from satisfied E85 users.
Oh, yeah. And we'll find out that we don't know what we're talking about.
Well, it may be. I mean, there is a sensor in the tank which determines, you know, which fuel you're using.
Yeah.
It's in the fuel line, and it has to adjust certain engine parameters. So it may be that it's not switching fast enough. But I have a funny feeling it's the O2 sensor that's reacting. And I didn't ask her how many miles she has on it, but if it's an O3... she probably has enough miles to warrant maybe a new O2 sensor. Just a guess.
Yeah.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Mary from Reston, Virginia.
Hey, Mary, what's going on?
Well, I have a 2005 Subaru Forester XT, which I absolutely love, and I actually don't have a lot of problems with it, except...
You will when we're done with you.
Well, I need a new car. It's just too small for my very, very large Newfoundland. He takes up the whole second seat. I need to have a crate for him to be safe. I need something with all-wheel drive, because I'm a ski instructor and I need to drive in the snow and ice.
Whoa.
That's going to fit a huge crate for my dog and maybe a new one if I get another one.
Another Newfie?
Oh, I wish.
No, I mean, you should really investigate the Chihuahuas.
Maybe. He loves those, too.
Yeah, Chihuahuas are really sweet.
Yeah, and the cars are a lot cheaper.
I could get a smart car, right?
Exactly. Yeah. She's, you know, the car that jumps to mind here.
Yeah.
And it has you and your dog written all over it.
Yeah?
Is the Honda Element.
That's
well,
true.
Well, is that an all-wheel drive car, though?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
They make it in two-wheel drive, but it's available in all-wheel drive.
Okay.
And that's good size.
Because I was thinking of the Toyota Sienna, too.
You could get a Sienna. And, well, the advantage of the Sienna is, you know, you can use it for other things. I mean, the back seats of the Element are kind of crummy. You wouldn't want to take a road trip and stick a couple of people in those back seats.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd be putting them down flat probably to put the crate in and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. But if you had to use the reason for getting the Sienna is what? Just more room?
I'm thinking that, right.
See, I think the Element might have as much room inside as the Sienna.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because even some of those large SUVs that talk about, they don't really have that much cargo space compared to some of the other cars.
Well, the only one that is kind of clever is the Chryslers, you know, the Caravans and whatnot, with that thing called Stow and Go, where the seats fold into the floor.
Oh, okay.
And then you have a big expansive floor, because not only does the third row seat fold in, but the two other seats in the middle row, they also fold into the floor and disappear.
But I found that some of those don't come in all-wheel drive.
They
anymore.
Don't. None of them come in all-wheel drive.
Right.
The only minivan that's all-wheel drive is the Sienna.
Right.
And the disadvantage of the Sienna, if I'm not mistaken, is you have to get run-flat tires because there's no spare tire.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
There's no place for it. Because that's where the four-wheel drive is. Where the spare. They said,
you want to put it on the roof.
Well, you could do that. You could put it in the dogs could play with it.
Exactly. That'll be his pillow.
So when you go to ski, you take the dog everywhere, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He comes. And if I drive up to Vermont or wherever I'm going, you know, he's coming.
He's coming. Anyone else? Just you and the hound?
Just me and the hound for now.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's
good luck.
You never know.
Well, thanks for your advice. I appreciate it.
All right, Mary. See you later.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right. Look, we have a brand new puzzle coming up. But before we get to that, we need to take a short break.
I take it you need a little more time to refine this new puzzler?
Well, yes, in the same sense that a plastic surgeon might refine your facial features.
You're taking an air chisel to it.
I was thinking dynamite, actually. Anyway, this new puzzler is from my Spies and Imposters series.
Ooh.
And I'll have it ready in just a minute.
And we'll have more of your car questions, too, so please stay tuned.
Cruising around about 76. track blasting the tune by sticks. I tried to make it easy to the flicks. Up to my usual bag of tricks. Naked in a Mega Late 78. Way past curfew, getting late. Fog in the windows, you can almost taste. Prom dress crumbled up around her waist. Little red baby, you make me smile. Radio stuck, ain't got no dial.
And even though the pilgrims say, is it too late to trade all this in for some harmless religious persecution whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and of course the new Puzzler.
Yeah, I can hardly wait.
Well, this just came across my desk.
Oh.
Yes, and I was looking at it the other day. It's from May of 2001.
By the way, you don't have a desk.
Oh, that's why it went unnoticed all this time.
And
anyway, I did say this was from my Spies and Imposters series, and this comes from a fellow named this. Oh, actually, he did email it, so I thought it might have predated his use of email. My fellow named John Philibert, and here it is. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
I had just arrived in Germany for my tour of duty with the Army, and I was interested in totally immersing myself in the local culture. I didn't want to stick out as the typical American GI, so I set out to try to blend in with the locals as much as I could.
Mm.
My first week there, I bought European label clothes. I went to a European barber to get a European haircut. Okay, that would still comply with the military standards.
Yeah.
And I bought European-style shoes, the whole bit, and I, even in every way possible, toned down my behavior so as to appear non-American, right?
Gotcha.
Now, I already knew French, and within a few weeks, I had learned about as much German as I could, and I even shopped at the German marketplace and ate German food. And to make matters even more in my favor, I had blonde hair and blue eyes from my Irish-Scottish heritage, and I figured that would really help me blend in.
Yeah.
Well, it was at the marketplace that my failure to blend in became apparent. I stood at a crosswalk waiting for the light to change. I had a pair of grocery sacks in hand when a German gentleman walked up and stood beside me, also to wait for the light. I glanced over and gave him a friendly nod. No more. No mm-hmm. words were exchanged. His reply was, "Hi, soldier." The question is, how did he know? Now, you have all the facts. You don't need to infer anything
really?
Further or farther. Further, father. Everything
yeah.
you need to know to solve the puzzle is right there, I believe.
Wow.
Now, if you think you know the answer, should I read it again? No, of course not.
No.
No, why would you want to do that?
No, that's enough.
If you can read it on our website. If you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a Country Estate 5.2-gallon apple cider and fruit press featuring steel frame and pan, food-grade finish, hardwood pressing basket, split hardwood pressing plate, deluxe fruit grinder with hopper extension, cast iron body, and solid steel axle rod, and send it along with about 150 pie crusts for when we get sick of all the juice to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt. 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
If you have a question about your car, give us a call, won't you? We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Barbara calling from New Haven, Connecticut.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
What's up?
So I drive a family heirloom, a 1993 Chrysler New Yorker. And when I start the car up in the morning, it lives outside. When I start it up in the morning, it sounds, and I turn the steering wheel, it sounds as though I'm, like, squeezing a mouse in my dashboard. Like, there's the squeak that radiates from under the hood.
Oh, as you're turning the wheel?
As I'm turning the wheel.
But is it a as you turn left and right? Like, so if you go left, right, or is it a constant squeal as you're turning the wheel?
It's more a constant squeal as I turn the wheel.
Oh. So if you turn the wheel to the left, say, mm-hmm. as you're turning, it's going or is it one continuous?
So I would say more the former than the latter. Yes.
And does it go away after 5 minutes or so?
Yeah, it definitely does. It's almost like an arthritic knee. It gets better as the car warms up.
Yeah, it sounds like your power steering belt is loose.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can go, and this 93 New Yorker, I think this may have a separate belt for the power steering. You just need to either get it tightened or replaced. And how did you come
93.
To own it? How did you, you drew the short straw, huh? How did you get this car?
So it actually, my grandmother bought it new, and then it was passed on to my mother, and now it has been passed on to me.
And it probably has about 10,000 miles on it.
Yeah, approximately. Approximately. 220.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
and how do you use the car, Barbara?
So I'm a full-time student, so it does a lot of sitting, and I generally drive it only on the weekends.
Gotcha.
Well, that isn't helping either, but you probably haven't done this, but you might want to take it someplace and just have the car kind of generally checked over.
So I actually just did that like 2 weeks ago.
Of course.
And they didn't notice anything at all, even though I had brought up the squeaking noise.
Well, and they didn't hear it because when you took the thing in, it was already warmed up.
Probably,
and the noise was gone. And what happens often is a belt that's old and cracked will make that noise when you first start it up. And then as the belt gets more pliant as it runs and it gets to move around those pulleys, the noise goes away and the rubber heats up a little bit and just the noise disappears.
Yeah, you have to ask them to keep the car overnight.
Maybe they can keep it overnight for like 5 or 6 years.
That too.
Yeah, I mean, if they hear the noise, if they look at the belt, they can tell if it's cracked or worn or dried out. And if that's the case, they should replace it. Otherwise, they can just tighten it. But my guess is Grandma didn't do it. Mom didn't do it. And now it's on you, Barbara.
Okay. I will put my foot down and tell them to put a new belt on.
Okay. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Now, I'm disappointed in that repair shop that she told them she had a problem.
She told them what the problem was.
And they didn't sell her a belt and brakes.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, a compressor and a new water pump. I mean,
what were they thinking?
The opportunities they had. Oh, God. Get their number.
They'll be out of business in no time.
888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. It's David in Denver, Colorado.
Hey, David.
Hi.
What's cooking, man?
I've got a 99 Mazda Protege, and I've got about 105,000 miles on it. It's a great running car. I drove it to Moab, Utah with my girlfriend. Somewhere along in there, I returned with a fiance. And
wait a minute. A different person?
No.
Oh, same person.
It's the same person.
Moab's a pretty romantic place, isn't it? I mean,
I guess so.
It is. I love it out there. If you guys haven't been, you should go.
I have been. I love it, too. So you went out there with a girlfriend. You came back with a fiance. How long did that process take?
2 days.
Oh, 2 days.
How long had she been a girlfriend?
About a year and a half at that point.
Oh, it was time.
Yeah, I think it was time.
Yeah.
I brought a doghouse with me just in case I needed it.
Okay. So anyway, what happened?
Well, we had a blowout at some point, maybe 25 miles outside of this town, Green River, Utah, and went to a little truck stop tire center, and they didn't have my size of tire, and they mounted a tire that was slightly bigger. I think my normal size is the 185 65 R14, and they put on the 185 75 R14. Since we made it back to Denver, no problem. Since we have come back, I've noticed a small rattling sound coming from underneath the car, maybe around the front axle, and mostly when I hit bumps or potholes. It's like it sounds like metal on metal. Is that bad?
Well, it has nothing to do with the tire.
Okay.
And it may have everything to do with when you had the blowout.
Yeah.
Is the noise coming from the same wheel where the blowout occurred?
I really can't locate if it's coming from the left or for the right. The blowout happened on the front passenger side.
How fast were you going when that happened?
We were going like 65.
Must have scared the bejeebers out of you.
Well, I think she was driving at the point.
Oh.
I heard a hiss from the wheel, and so she pulled over. I just kind of said, pull over. She did, really calmly. I mean, that was like a big criteria in a relationship for me because she didn't scream and panic. She just very calmly pulled over.
Good for her.
By the way, I should take this opportunity to mention that all the morons who talk and text on their cell phones when they're driving would have died if this had happened to them.
Oh, yeah.
Because the reason she was able to calmly steer the car over to the side of the road is that
she,
well, not only did she have two hands, but one brain focused on the matter at hand. And if you're, you know, then the reason there aren't more cell phone accidents is that the vast majority of the time you drive, nothing like this ever happens. But when it does happen, you die.
Right.
And anyway, what's wrong with your car is that you have, and the noise is clank, clank, clank when you go over the right kind of bumps.
Yeah.
It's because
yeah.
the two broken pieces of this thing called your stabilizer link are hitting one another.
Okay.
And the stabilizer is a device, it's a bar that runs between the two front wheels, and in lots of cars there's a stabilizer in the rear too. And what it does is it doesn't allow the car to pitch excessively on hard turns. So the stabilizer essentially tries to keep all four wheels on the ground when you're making a hard left or right. And the links are what connect the stabilizer bar to the control arms. But that link, that metal link, is broken, and that's the noise you're hearing.
Okay.
It's not dangerous in that it doesn't portend that something is going to fall off. It's only dangerous in that the car is not going to handle as well as it should, and the noise is going to drive you crazy. So you should take it in someplace and see if that link is broken.
Okay, so I'm a student. Is it costly to repair, or is it something I can do?
You're going
to
get married? You're a student, and you're going to get married?
Yeah, I'm crazy.
Oh, David, what are you studying?
He's got to do this before he gets too smart.
That's right. That's right.
That's how it works.
Yeah, before you learn too much, you got to get married.
Yeah,
I suppose. Take it from my brother. He knows.
I do, certainly do.
What are you studying, David?
Well, I'm finishing up my political science degree,
yeah.
And then I am 99.9% certain, after of course taking the LSAT, that I'm going to law school to study constitutional law. I'm a little older than the average traditional student, so maybe age is working on my side, or maybe not.
Maybe experience. Yes, you're going to be old and married, and you're going to be a student.
But law is a good thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
If you made a mistake with the marriage.
Right. You'd have an inside track with a good lawyer. Well, good luck, David. Get that stab. I wouldn't be surprised if both stabilizer links are broken. I wouldn't be surprised either if they resulted from the blowout, but they could just have worn out.
Okay.
You could also have a ball joint that's worn out. So when they take the car in, they should check the entire steering and suspension systems.
Sounds good.
Because it would make sense on a car this age. See ya.
Thanks, Josh.
Good luck with your marriage and law school and all that stuff. And
congratulations, David.
Thank you. I'll update you guys another time.
All right. Bye-bye.
See you.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there. This is Claire calling from Gillette, Wyoming.
Hey, Claire.
Gillette, Wyoming.
Jeez, I may have been there once.
Well, then you'll know what I'm talking about.
Maybe.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Hey, I have a 2004 Subaru Legacy and a 2004 Buick Rainier, a V8.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my problem. Every 2 weeks, I have to haul my precious baby boy, Jack, who's 4, over to the Black Hills where his father lives.
Uh-huh.
And the last 30 miles is treacherous. Which car should I keep?
Treacherous in what way?
I see snowy 25 miles an hour corners and no cell phone range up the mountains.
Well, the Rainier is the Rainier, as I'd call it, is all-wheel drive.
Both of them are, yes, sir.
Which one do you feel safer driving? I think a lot of it depends on the visibility that the car has or how you think it handles.
Well, you know, I like my Subaru because it's zippy and it's low to the ground.
You ain't zipping. Yeah. You ain't zipping when it's treacherous.
No, sir. But I think it handles better. But I feel safe like I'm driving a tank in the Rainier. I mean, it's a great car, and I feel like if we roll or something, we're safe.
Well, not if you roll down the mountain.
Well, and also we have deer, and I think if I'm going to hit a deer, which is likely, you know, I don't know. They're both paid for, and they both have the same mileage. I just feel guilty having two vehicles, and I have been known to hug a tree before, so I feel guilty keeping the SUV when I only need it for the treacherous winter months.
And how many miles are on the Legacy, did you say?
Both cars have 40,000.
Does the Rainier have stability control?
Oh, Oh, yes, it's a sweet car. It is nice, I have to admit.
I mean, how many miles per gallon do you get with the Rainier?
Oh, you know, like 16, 15. But I only have a garage with one car, so the other one, the poor guy, has to sit outside and, you know.
Now, I don't know what the crash test numbers are for these things, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Subaru was better.
Well, you know, here's the thing I've heard before is that, like, an SUV, sure, you're safer, but they're heavier and they're also higher, so they're more likely to roll and you can't stop as quick.
Well, that's true, but this has stability control, so it's less likely to flip over. I mean, that,
really?
And that's the reason they did it. So the Rainier might be safer in that it's, you know, it's less likely to flip over on you, even though it's more top-heavy. The Subaru has the advantage of being low to the ground.
Right.
But it doesn't have as good ground clearance, so if there's heavy snow
right.
in the road, you could get stuck.
Right, that's true, too.
And if you get stuck...
No one's going to help me.
You might find yourself passing through the digestive system of a wolf.
I don't want that. And see, that's my other problem is there's no cell phone coverage up there. I mean, he lives out in the boonies of the Black Hills.
Why doesn't he come?
Well, we take turns.
Oh, I see.
We take turns, and he actually has a Subaru himself, so he's got that.
But even if he came to your house, he probably would take the kid back to his house.
Yeah, we both have to travel this 30 miles of IT,
yeah.
And winter's here, and we're in... It's last weekend was scary.
Yeah, if you considered living together.
Are you kidding? We tried that for 3 years.
Well,
I'm in Wyoming.
Make sure the Rainier has stability control, because if it doesn't, then my vote would definitely go to the Subaru.
Okay.
But if it has it, I think I'm kind of on the fence.
Yeah, well.
And if you like the Rainier, then that's the one you're going to drive.
Okay. Well, yeah, I do feel safe in it.
Okay.
Good
all
luck.
Right. All right, just don't drive like a nut. That's all.
Well, I won't drive by, like, either of you guys.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Beacon Hill Lemon Dill, Gull and Gill, Roadside Kill, Peppermill, Charcoal Grill, Belly Fill, Hungry Still, then Duck the Bill, Free Lunch Drill is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. My brother's official co-pilot is Yvette DePants. Our repo man is Carmine Now. Our PR specialist is U Lion Sack. My puzzler assistant is Norma Lee Bogus. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the organic newspaper vendors in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 947, stroll through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Or if you prefer, you can call the Shameless Commerce Division for Car Talk gifts at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, our complete guide to winter driving.
Yeah, tips about preparing your car for winter, driving in snow, maximizing your traction.
I only have one tip for winter driving.
Well, what's that?
Get a job like mine, where you're considered a non-essential employee. Then you just stay home when it snows.
Sure, but what's everyone else going to do? How many jobs are there as non-essential as yours?
Well, there's yours.
Well, that's true. Check out our best advice for winter driving.
All this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Hu Jintao says there are some things you should keep solely for domestic consumption, whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.